Well, welcome back. It's day number two. How did you do on day one? We tried to make the tasks for you very simple, very easy, and something was real doable. So did you follow through? Did you write down what you really want so you have a goal, something that's compelling that you're going for? Did you, in fact, write down all the food that you consumed that day, everything that passed your lips? I sure hope so, because you can't change something you're not aware of. And one of the first things you're going to discover is the more aware you are of your patterns, the more you measure them, just measuring them alone breaks up the pattern. Because it takes them from the frame of being unconscious to being conscious. And then we asked you if you'd go out there and move your body for 15 minutes aggressively, where you could still talk, but you could feel a definitive change in the way you were breathing and your movement quality, so that you felt like you were beginning to create some of that energy in your body, if nothing else, just by dynamic movements, whether it was dancing, walking, or anything else that you chose. Did you follow through? I sure hope so. If not, you need to double up today. And you know what? That strategy doesn't work. After a few days, pretty soon you're overloaded. So catch the monster while it's little. One of the things I tell people is, you know, you get overweight, it's not because one night in the middle of the night, 30 pounds arrived on your body. If you would have been measuring along the way, you could have broken the pattern. But most people who get overweight don't measure every day. If you measured every day and looked at what had happened every single day, you'd remind yourself that you were not on course for what you believe in. You'd be giving yourself a little bit of pain, and you'd want the pleasure of taking control. So one of the things we're going to apply throughout this program is the more we measure something, the better we'll get at being not only aware of them, but interrupting them as well. Now let's recap what we talked about yesterday. In addition to that, we talked about the three elements of lasting change: the raising of our standards, the changing of our beliefs, and the adoption of strategies that have already proven to be successful in a given situation. We also talked about the six master steps to change: the process of discovering what you want, getting leverage on yourself, interrupting the pattern, creating an empowering alternative, reinforcing that alternative until it's conditioned and automatic, and then testing it to make sure it works. So today, the big question I have for you, and the thing I want us to review, is you now know what you want. What would prevent you from following through and making what you want happen? What would prevent you from creating the body that you deserve? Well, the obvious thing is we've talked about thus far is not knowing what to do. But we're going to talk to you about that in much more specificity over the next couple days. But there's a bigger issue. The bigger issue is a lot of people know what to do and they still don't follow through. And invariably, there are a few simple reasons for this, but they all come down to what I would call mixed neuroassociations. What does that mean? It means they associate in their nervous system, in their gut, both pain and pleasure to making a change. And invariably, this will keep anyone from changing. In other words, we have mixed emotions, to keep it simple. I'll give you an example. Oftentimes in a relationship, a person will be unhappy in a relationship. They know that the relationship is not at the quality they want it to be. They have a lot of pain in their life about it. Yet they still don't leave the relationship. They stay in it. It might even be an abusive relationship. They stay there. Why? Because while they link pain to being in the relationship, they link an equal amount, maybe more pain, to the idea of suddenly not being in any relationship. They say, well, my relationship is bad. But having no relationship, being alone, that might even be worse. And so since they have mixed emotions, the brain is not sure whether this action that they're thinking of taking, this breaking up, is going to mean pain or pleasure. And when our imagination is unleashed, it's easy for us to hallucinate that change is going to be more painful than where we are. At least we know how things are. Most people have a fear of the unknown. So you want to make a change. You say, I want to become thin. I want to become fit. I want the body I deserve. Yet, unconsciously, most people have mixed emotions as to either A, whether they can really do it or not. After all, what if I put my all into this? I work really hard. I make changes in my diet and my exercise, and I actually lose the weight, but I only go back. I've gone through that before, and that's so painful. It's almost like, why even try? Because all I'm doing is setting myself up for more pain, more disappointment. When you have mixed feelings like this, you're not going to commit 1,000%. Or B, a person links, well, yeah, I think I could change, but what would that mean to my life? If I'm a woman and I all of a sudden I'm extremely thin and fit and attractive, are men now going to be obnoxious and start to harass me? Are they going to start judging me by my body instead of for the quality of my character? Now, most men are not too terribly concerned about this. They're not usually saying to themselves, well, gosh, if I become too fit and strong, will women attack me on a regular basis and will I have to deal with this? But men have their own challenges. Most of their challenges, I think, come to the fact that many of them will say, well, gosh, if I get thin and fit, you know, does that mean I can't enjoy my life anymore? I can't go out and, you know, do the indulgences I used to enjoy doing with my buddies? Does this mean all of a sudden I'm an outcast? Will I be able to maintain this? Will I feel like a failure if I don't? Again, you've got these fears not only of one's ability to do something, but what are the consequences once it's accomplished? Whenever our brain has mixed emotions, That is whenever we think of doing something and our brain says that could be pleasurable, but it also could be painful. We have to remember our brain is programmed to avoid pain. We'll do much more, most of us, to avoid pain than we'll ever do to gain pleasure. Part of it is a survival instinct. What does pain mean? Pain in your nervous system says, hey, something is wrong. Continuous pain, intense enough pain, may mean damage is occurring. Enough damage equals death. So in our nervous system, we've been trained to avoid the pain. And for many people, that means trained to stay in the status quo. Stay in a situation that may be quite uncomfortable, might be embarrassing, might be below your standards, but people get used to lowered standards. I'll never forget when I came to San Diego one time and I met this gentleman who was homeless and he was sleeping in his car. And he was a very attractive young man, obviously very bright and intelligent. And I said, how did you come to be living in your car? And it's a classic example of how easy it is for us to get trapped and lower our standards without even realizing it. The bottom line is the man had traveled from Boston out to San Diego to get a job. The job was confirmed before he got here. By the time he finished driving across the country, the company not only canceled his job, but a whole division of the company had been laid off. All of a sudden, he's in a city he doesn't know anybody. He doesn't really have any extra money. He's trying to figure out how to conserve, so he thought, well, just for the night, I'll stay in this place. I'll stay in my car. I can park here by the beach. It's not that bad. Tomorrow, I'll go work to get a new job. I'll find something. I'm committed. Well, the next day, he did not succeed, so he stayed in the car a second day. By the third day, he realized he needed to go get a welfare check. He needed to make sure he could survive. When he got the check, it was so small, he thought, I can't spend this money on a place. I'll have a place soon, and he stayed in the car. Well, as you can imagine, after about a week and a half or 2 weeks, he started saying, well, this is pretty great. It's like a mobile home. You know, I can go where I want to go. I can park near the beach. I got freedom. I don't have any bills. He actually began to link inside of his head, sleeping in his car was less pain than having the pressure of having a home. More flexibility. He said, I couldn't afford a place that's near the ocean. Sounds logical. But gradually, his standards had dropped so much that now he can't get himself to do almost anything. You and I have probably not gone to the same extremity. Yet at the same time, the pattern is very similar. You know, what happens? You gain an extra pound or two, you don't really notice it. Yeah, then you notice and go, well, I kind of overate, it's not so great. But, you know, I'll do something about it tomorrow. And the next day, some other great thing happens and you want to celebrate or you're stressed and so you use food as a way to change your state. Next thing you know, you start to gain a little bit more. It's almost imperceptible in the beginning. But over a period of weeks or maybe months, what happens? Pretty soon you start saying, ah, it's not so bad. You know, my pants still are okay, they're a little bit tighter, or I can get a new pair of pants. Boy, that's the thing you want to avoid. Let me tell you that right now. The big thing I learned to do to change my weight, I should tell you this, is I stopped buying new clothes when I got fatter. I made myself stay in them so that I got enough pain that I had to make some changes there. We'll talk about that later, but I just remembered that. I hear so many people say, yeah, well, I gained weight. I said, did you buy some new clothes? And they said, yes. I said, that is the death rattle. That's the fat rattle. I can promise you that if you go out and buy new clothes, you're now saying, I'm going to lower my standard. You keep those clothes there, even if it's uncomfortable. That's wonderful, because every day you won't be able to escape the fact that you got to make a change. But you know what? That's not what most people do. They see that change is going to create pain. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to do something I don't want to do. And, gosh, you know, what I'm doing right now is pleasurable. And so they get caught up in this pattern of lowering their standards continuously. We have to break out of that. We have to remember that for every disciplined effort, there is a multiple reward. It isn't just physical. It's the mental benefit. It's the emotional benefit. So what we've got to change, and what I want to focus on today with you in this little brief lesson, is we've got to make sure that whatever we believe about eating that doesn't support us, whatever we believe about excess weight that is limiting us, we've got to interrupt those patterns. And the first step to interrupting a pattern is getting aware that it even exists. So what are some of these beliefs that you and I have got to be careful to avoid adopting in any way? Well, let's start with a big one. The one global organizing principle that I mentioned yesterday that I want to remind you of again today, because I don't know of one that can create greater damage or that can be more debilitating in our lives. And that's the core belief that says the problem is permanent. Any belief that ties into this frame of reference is one you want to avoid. Because once we accept a problem as permanent, then we know there's nothing we can do to make a difference. If we do anything, if we try anything to create a change, our brain's saying, hey, we're wasting our time, we're wasting our energy, it's not going to work anyway, and we'll do a half-hearted attempt, which when you put a half-hearted attempt into anything, you know the results are going to be lousy. Beliefs like, I'm older now, so no matter what I do, I'm going to gain weight. You know, my body just isn't going to burn anymore. You know, I'm not a young kid anymore. That belief is a piece of garbage, and we're going to show you that anyone can change their metabolism at any age. In fact, researchers are now doing this with people in their 70s and 80s. In fact, not only are they changing their metabolism, they're changing their muscular strength. We'll talk a little bit about this later on, but to give you a little bit of an idea, There are researchers now taking people in their 70s, putting them on a training program, and getting to be just as strong as people in their 20s. These are people who previously had weak bones, who had little or no muscle, and no muscular training whatsoever. Age is an absolutely absurd myth, one you want to avoid at all costs. Now, are we limited to age views on this? No. We can have things about, well, it's a thyroid problem. While it's true that many people do have thyroid challenges, there are ways of changing even the interaction that your thyroid has, ways of stimulating it through exercise. Beliefs that destroy our capacity to create change are not limited to beliefs in the area of age. Some people just look at it as it's an inherited problem. Now, my weight problems are inherited. It's because my mother is overweight. My father's overweight. You know what? It may be because you eat the same way they did. Did you ever consider that? You know what? We fail to ask ourselves sometimes, what are the other factors that could also describe why many different family members might be overweight? Could it be that we've adopted very similar dietary patterns, either in the amounts of food that we eat or the type of food we eat, maybe the amount of fat that we intake in our diet, since many of our dietary patterns were shaped by our family experiences? Since many of the choices as to what we're going to eat and how much we're going to eat was shaped by our parents, and so those patterns were shaped by them. Not to mention the fact that if you live in a family where parents are overweight, you're going to have a different set of standards than you would if you grew up in a family where everyone was physically fit and healthy, wouldn't you? All of a sudden, what is acceptable for a person growing up in this environment, what's acceptable in terms of weight is quite different. When a person actually would become concerned or upset or frustrated or begin to give themselves pain for their weight would change. And pretty soon when you begin to live a pattern long enough, of course you're going to adopt similar patterns. This is not to negate the fact that there are genetic tendencies oftentimes in terms of one's tendency to burn fat. But science has now proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that no matter what your tendency is, you can retrain your metabolism to burn fat more efficiently than ever before. My good friend Stu Middleman, the gentleman who ran 1,000 miles in 11 days, is a man who wasn't a runner, and yet he trained his body to burn fat. He could not have run those kinds of distances. He ran 84 miles a day. And we're going to talk about, when we get to the exercise portion of this program, about how he did that. No, don't panic. I'm not going to have you run 84 miles a day, but I do want you to know how to train your body to burn fat so that when you eat whatever food you eat, your body is much more effective in getting rid of excess fat. This will make you healthier. This will make you more vital. It'll give you more energy. Ultimately, you've got to realize the amount of fat you're taking in has got to be either utilized or eliminated. And if you have excess fat on your body, it's because you're taking more in than you're able to either utilize or eliminate. It's that simple. What are some of the other myths that would keep us from creating change? Beliefs that we have about exercise can make a big difference in what we're willing to do or not. We're willing to attempt. And I'm here to tell you something right now, and I don't want you to panic because we haven't explained how yet, but I don't know how you can be vitally healthy and energized without exercise being a part of your lifestyle. Now, how do you exercise without it being stressful? How do you do it where it doesn't take a lot of time? We're going to talk about that in more detail on day 5. Now, don't jump up to there. Stay with me. We're doing this a step at a time. But the point of the matter is, the truth is that if you have beliefs like exercise isn't really useful because all it does is it makes me burn more calories and it makes me hungrier, all you're telling me is you're not exercising in the appropriate way. You've not been taught how to exercise effectively. If you're throwing your pendulum, there are ways of exercising, for example, where what you burn primarily are carbohydrates. There's a point in many people's form of exercise where they're literally depleting their body of blood sugar. And when that happens, the body goes into tilt. That's how people get injured. That's how you get yourself in a position where you have a ravenous appetite all of a sudden, and I'm going to show you how to avoid that. So don't buy into this theory, nor should you buy into the theory that says, well, I've got a bad back so I can't exercise, or I've got a bad heart. Yes, you're going to need to talk to your doctor first, but I can tell you, I go up very often to UCLA up in Los Angeles, and I oftentimes run up there along the track, and there are a whole group of men and women there who've just been through heart surgery, open heart surgery, people who have got cancer and a variety of other challenges who their doctors are up there having them on an exercise program. Now, they're not up there trying to do wind sprints, but what they've actually found is the body heals more rapidly when circulation is increased, when oxygen is increased to all the parts of the body, and when it's done in the least stressful way possible. And I'm suggesting to you that no matter what your physical condition is currently, there is a form of non-stressful exercise that would be appropriate for you. Maybe it's getting on a rebounder, one of those mini trampolines, and where you don't even jump. You can just stand on it, not even lift your heels from the mat, and just bounce gently in a way that stimulates the flow of oxygen throughout your entire body. Don't fall into the category of having some limiting belief about exercise that'll keep you from having what you want. There is a way to exercise that it's appropriate for you. If you're committed, you'll find it. We'll talk more about that when we get to that section on the tape. The other core belief I often find in people who can't seem to find an ability to lose weight is they start to believe that fatness is like a disease, that it's a symptom of some deep personality problem, and the only way to solve the problem for them is to go through some prolonged psychotherapy, and along the way, of course, they need to eat until they finally resolve the challenge. Let me tell you something, that's absurd. Poor eating habits and a sedentary lifestyle are learned patterns, and whatever you've learned, you can unlearn just as easily as long as you're committed and use the very strategies we've talked about here. If you get leverage on yourself, if you interrupt your pattern, you come up with an intelligent alternative that's even more fun than what you used to do, which wouldn't be hard to do if what you used to do was be overweight and not move very much. And there are many other myths. Myths like starvation diets are the most effective way to control your weight, which obviously is not true, it never works, or that diet pills or some tricky gadget's gonna make weight loss easy and permanent. The only way you're gonna create lasting change is by adopting a lifestyle that makes sense. No fad diet's gonna replace it. What do all these things have in common? All of these myths are merely belief systems. Now here's the challenge. We have different levels of belief. If we really believe in these myths, they will control our lives and keep us from utilizing the resources we have available right now to change our life. And I know you're here and committed to changing your life. So where do they play a role? Step one, you got to become aware of any limiting beliefs you may have about losing weight. So I suggest we do that right now. I want you to take out your notebook, and I want you to immediately write down two sets of beliefs. Because what you're going to find is you often have mixed feelings, mixed emotions, as we talked about, in terms of weight loss. So turn to the page where it talks about belief systems, and right next to it, on one side of the page, write down all the empowering beliefs you have about your ability to lose weight permanently, things that you've begun to believe, and on the right-hand side, write down all the limiting beliefs, all the mixed emotions that you might have. Beliefs like, well, I can't do it because I'm too old. Beliefs like, well, you know, my metabolism is different than other people's. Beliefs like, I don't have the discipline to do it. The only people who ever really lose weight are either those who just do it naturally or those who have this incredible willpower. Hogwash. They're just people who develop the right pattern. So what I want you to do, though, is just write them down so that you can stare at them in front of you. Every empowering belief you can think of that you have, beliefs like, well, you know what, I know in my gut that whenever I set my mind to it, I can lose weight. I know that by conditioning myself, I'll get myself to follow through in areas where willpower has failed in the past. Another empowering belief might be, by adopting the right dietary strategy, I take in a lot less fat and enjoy my food a lot more. What are some of the most empowering beliefs you can come up with? What are the most limiting beliefs? Let's have you write those down. Turn off the tape right now and do it, and then come back and let's chat some more. Go for it. Once again, welcome back. And again, I'm assuming that you did do your homework, that you did do these beliefs. If you didn't do it, stop the tape. Come on. You got to do the steps here. Don't just listen passively. Make it happen. And of course, now that you're back with me, having done that, those of you who've done so, my question for you is real simple. When you look at these beliefs, can you see the mixed messages your brain might be getting? Yeah, I can do this, but no, what if I don't? See, it's very hard to serve two different masters. If one master says you can make it happen, the other one says there's no way, if you're trying to hit two different targets that are in two different directions, you're going to be split inside. And no one who's split is going to have the power or congruency to get themselves to do whatever's necessary to succeed. So how do we deal with this? Let's first of all realize what a belief is. A belief, a real belief, not just an opinion, a real belief is nothing but a feeling of certainty as to what something means. So as a simple example, if you said, well, I believe I'm intelligent, what are you really saying? You're saying, I feel certain I'm intelligent. If you said, I believe I'm really sexy, I have a great body, you're saying, I feel certain that I'm sexy, I have a great body. Now, if you realize that all a belief is nothing but a feeling of certainty, the big question is, what makes us feel certain about something? And the answer is, we have what I would call reference experiences that back them up. Try this if you would. Here's the difference between an idea and a belief. Maybe this metaphor will help. An idea is like a tabletop with no legs. What's the problem? Well, you can't put anything against the table or it's going to fall because there's nothing underneath it supporting it. What's a belief? It's a table with legs. See, when you say, I know I'm intelligent, I believe I'm intelligent, you're saying, I feel certain. Remember, that's the feeling it is, a feeling of certainty. I feel certain that I'm intelligent. Well, that certainty comes from the fact that that idea, that tabletop, has got legs under it, and the legs are what we call reference experiences. You did well on a test. Somebody told you you were really bright. You figured out a major problem. You seemed to solve lots of challenges. Each one of these examples I just gave you is another leg underneath your tabletop that supports this sense of certainty that you're intelligent. So what's the problem with weight loss? Well, for a lot of people, the problem is they don't have a lot of references. Or they've got references of the opposite tabletop idea. They have a belief that says, I can't ever lose weight because after all, every time I lose it, it never lasts. And you know what? They got this example and that example and the other example, and the time they went on the high protein diet, and the time when they went on the starvation diet, and the time when they went on the liver and yeast diet. I mean, all the weird, crazy things that people do, the time they took all those wonderful pills. See, most people have lots of references of failing, and they allow that to make themselves feel certain that they're not going to succeed. Let me tell you a core belief that changed my life in every aspect, also helped me lose weight when nothing else had worked for me. I decided I had to adopt a new belief, and that belief was simply this: the past does not equal the future. I don't care what you've done in the past and whether it's worked or not. Who you are today is different, and what you choose to do right now, today, is going to shape today and going to create your tomorrow. We often, though, get caught up saying, well, I've tried everything. I go, come on, you haven't tried anything. Well, I've tried millions of ways of changing things. Millions? Really? Well, have you even tried thousands of ways of changing? I doubt it. Have you even tried hundreds of ways? Most people are lucky if they've tried a dozen or two ways of creating a change, and what they then say is, I've tried everything. Don't give yourself this lie. You hurt yourself by it. This is the kind of lie that ties you into this limiting belief that keeps you from discovering what really can change your life.